We don't normally do this, but we start the show with hockey.
Race for the playoffs is it's time. Well, for the first time in their franchise history, the Columbus Blue Jackets have advanced in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
So I put this on Twitter last night. Imagine, and hockey's not as popular of a sport as the NFL, the NBA, or Major League Baseball. But imagine the Golden State Warriors a few years ago winning 73 games, which they did, an NBA record, 73 games in a season. Imagine them losing in the first round of the NBA playoffs, and they were swept four straight games. Would that be a pretty big deal?
Yes. It'd be a really big deal.
It just happened in hockey last night. The Tampa Bay Lightning tied an NHL record for most wins in a season with 62. They lost just 16. Their goal differential, they scored 103 more goals than the competition, which was double what the next best team did this year. They were dominant. They were the favorite going in. Number one team, number one seed in NHL playoffs. They drew the Columbus Blue Jackets, who went 47-31 this year. And Tampa Bay Lightning, after setting a record for most wins in the season in the NHL, couldn't even win one game in their first-round series against Columbus. They get swept four straight games. John Cooper, the head coach of Tampa Bay, trying to explain what happened to the Lightning.
You know, when you get to the playoffs, you got to remember half the teams in the league are out, so everybody in the playoffs is good. And they've earned their way here. So in today's game with the parity, it's not unusual that a 8-1 anymore. Everybody's that close. You know, in the end, it's just we couldn't find our game. That was it.
Tampa Bay Lightning struck by lightning, and now they're dead. That's probably the quickest analogy I can make. The Lightning lose 7-3 last night. The Blue Jackets gave up three empty netters at the very end when they were down one. So the Blue Jackets advance, sweeping the best team in the NHL and the best regular season team in NHL history, along with the Red Wings back in the late 90s. Islanders sweep the Penguins. Penguins are usually right in the mix for the Stanley Cup. Won a couple here recently. Islanders sweep, winning 3-1. The Winnipeg Jets tie their series at 2-2 with the St. Louis Blues with a 2-1 overtime win yesterday. And the Vegas Golden Knights, I want to go to a hockey game out in Vegas sometime. That just looks awesome.
I do too.
A friend of mine, Byron, went last year. He said it was pretty cool. They shut out the Sharks last night 5-0. They lead 3-1. And then today, Toronto, game 4, Maple Leafs against the Bruins. They lead 2-1. Nashville, the Predators against the Dallas Stars. Predators lead 2-1. That's your update on the NHL playoffs. First time ever on the sports ticket we have started with hockey. I don't even have to look that up. I know that's the first time we've ever started with hockey, but it takes something historic for that to happen, and it happened last night. All right, Dusty, yes. Local sports information.
Yeah, a lot of local sports. We'll start real quick with softball yesterday. The Boyd Letty Trojans pick up a sweep over Ellsworth. They're now 4-0 in the NCAA after those wins. They went 16-8 in the first game and 16-7 in the second game. Breezy Schroeder had 3 home runs and 12 RBI combined in the 2 games. So
say that again.
3 home runs and 12 RBI in the 2 games combined.
That's a good week or month.
I know.
But that was in a night. Wow.
Yeah.
Gee, Breezy, check her bat. That might be illegal.
There's something in it.
Has Breezy been working out?
I don't know what helps aluminum bats.
Breezy been pumping the iron? Holy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have they juiced the base or the softball?
Yeah.
If it's a baseball, we got a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Softball, but... Wow, three home runs and 12 RBIs?
Yeah.
Sounds like Christian Yelich of the Milwaukee Brewers,
yes.
Which we're going to talk about in a little bit about him.
Yep.
I bet Ellsworth doesn't want to pitch to her next time.
No, they don't.
Good job, Breezy. Yeah. Way to go.
So Breezy really pacing Beloit yesterday offensively to those two wins. Again, they went 16-8 and 16-7 over Ellsworth. Scored 7 runs in the 6th inning of the second game, really, to break away in that one. Then baseball yesterday, Lincoln Sylvan Lucas taking on Ellis, and Ellis gets a sweep there, 14-4 in 5 innings in the first game and 5-1 in the second. There's lots of track and field results that you can find at nckssports.com. If you want full results, the Beloit Trojans boys took first place at the Lions Club Invitational, which was hosted by Republic County, but it was held in Concordia yesterday. And just like I said, a lot of great performances from Beloit yesterday, and you can find full results at ncksports.com. And on girls' side, Beloit finished in third place there at the Republic County Lions meet. And then also on the girls' side in Wilson, the Wilson Invitational at Russell. Lakeside took first place in track there. And on the girls' side, 108 points. And again, a nice performance, a nice day for Lakeside there. On the girls' side, and Lakeside boys finished in fourth. Sylvan Lucas was second, the top finisher from our area at the Wilson Invitational and Russell on the boys' side. So, again, a lot there and a lot to talk about as far as the track and field results are concerned. It would take me a long time just to go through all the gold medal winners. So all those results are at ncksports.com. Northern Plains League Golf, we just got this morning, so we'll post this later as well at ncksports.com. The team champion at the NPL Golf Tournament yesterday at Downs was Osborne, 321. St. John's finished in second. Rock Hills third, tipped in fourth. And the individual MPL champion this year, Brady Paulin from St. John's, shot a 74, two strokes better than Eric Kenigsman of Tipton. Cale Dubert finished third for St. John's, rounding out the top five, Brandon Befford of Osborne and Steele Walters of Osborne. So those are the results from MPL Golf yesterday. So and all that stuff by the afternoon will be posted at ncksports.com. You can listen to my sportscast as well for a more comprehensive look at track and field from yesterday.
We got some interesting news. Let's start with the, did you mention the coaching changes?
I have not
here?
Yet.
Let's go ahead and go to that, because Russell is a revolving door for high school sports coaches, especially football. And
yeah,
once again, Russell's going to have a new football coach because their current one's leaving to go to Concordia.
It's funny, we talked the other day about that coaching carousel in college basketball.
We were. About Doc
this
Sadler.
Affects this and this affects this. Well, Concordia with Austin Kingsbury going to Solana Central to be the defensive coordinator opened that job up. So Russell coach Jordan Ecker, who was there for 1 year, now going up to Concordia. Well, Concordia has their coach now. He'll also coach track and field there. He was doing that at Russell as well, and he's finishing that out here this spring. And so Russell needs a coach now, and now you get the former Thunder Ridge coach, Otis Hendricks, who will be the head coach of the Russell Broncos. Struggled a bit at Thunder Ridge, went 3-23, but he's got a decent record as far as the overall is concerned. He's like 11 games under 500, 62-73, I'm pretty sure, is his overall record. And so he'll go there, and obviously he's not a head coach right now, so that doesn't open up anymore. That stops the revolving door, I guess, with that as he goes to Russell. So Otis Hendricks, the new head coach there, and you can read much more about that at ncksports.com as well.
This show's like a Seinfeld episode today, just bookcasing itself, because Doc Sadler was the one I brought up leaving Southern Miss. How it can create the music carousel, the coaching carousel, as you just referred to, in high school here in the area. And I have more news about Doc Sadler coming up in just a moment.
So yeah,
it all ties together. Other big news, this coming out, I don't know if you've seen this, Dusty. The Mid-Continent League is going to have a new member.
I have not seen that.
Hoxie will join the league partially in 2019 and 20, then fully the following cycle. That makes the league a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
Hoxie is usually very good in almost every sport. So Hoxie will join the Mid-Continent League partially in the 19 and 20 season, and then fully after that. So the MCL just got tougher.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That would be number 11 now.
Wow, very interesting.
Most I've ever heard.
Now if they get Louisville, they'd have 12.
Yeah.
that's a joke on the Big 12. Yep. Refusing Louisville.
I got it. It didn't go over my head.
Refusing Louisville because they didn't have 12. Well, that's 11. Well, yeah, find another one. You know, whatever. Big 12 totally messed that up. Okay, any other sports news locally?
I think that covers it. I guess Blaise Spangler signed a letter of intent last week to compete pole vault at Fort Hays State University. And again, you can read much more about that and see her picture and everything at ncksports.com as well.
Wow. Good news. Lots of good news to report there, and interesting news as well, especially from a local standpoint. So, yeah, I'm trying to tweet you this information so that you'll have it right here. So, yeah, there we go. Boom. I just tweeted while I was on the air. Okay, 9:19 is the time here on the Sports Ticket. Where should we go? You want to go NBA playoffs, or do you want to go Royals baseball? Which one would you like, Dustin?
Well, they're both depressing for me, so you can do whatever you want. Might as well knock the Royals out, right?
You might knock the Royals out? Okay.
Like, literally, just
all
knock
right.
them out.
Let's just knock them out. Okay, well, let's start with the positive.
Must feel even more comfortable as Duda launches it to right field, and the Royals take a 1-0 lead as Duda hits it way up into the bleachers beyond the Royals' bullpen.
And that was the offense for the Royals, their one shining moment last night, the home run by Duda. In the second, White Sox get one in the third, three in the fifth, an insurance run in the eighth, And Jorge Lopez, who's really been good through five innings this year, but once he gets in the sixth, has issues. That sounds like Ian Kennedy and other starting pitchers the Royals have had in the past. Lopez strikes out a career-high 10, and he did that in the first four innings. Gives up three home runs, so the home runs accounting for all four runs. He's 0-2. Of course, he should have had a win his last time out, but the Royals bullpen blew it in Kansas City after having a 4-0 lead. And the Royals offense musters just five hits in the ballgame, although Alex Gordon hitting .345 to start the year. Witt's hitting .311. I didn't see exactly why didn't Mondesi not play last night. They're just giving him a rest.
I don't even know. Honestly.
If it's just a rest, it's ridiculous. Yeah. He's 23 years old, and we played 17 games. If you need a rest now, there's a problem. I'm guessing he was either sick or had a bit of an ailment or an injury or a bruised quad or something. I don't know. I didn't see the game last night, I'll be honest with you. I didn't sound like I missed much.
No, I didn't either.
But I don't know why Mondesi, he should be playing every single day unless he's hurt or sick. Maybe he was. I don't know. I didn't see anything on Twitter either talking about it, which is amazing to me because he's their star player in my opinion. But anyway, the Royals lose 5-1 to the White Sox last night. The Royals are now 5-12, and the boys in blue will be back at it. Coming up today, they'll try to avoid being swept by the White Sox. Are they playing four games? Nope, just three games. White Sox this afternoon at 1:10. Brad Keller, who's been very good, 2-1 with ERA 2.45 in Chicago against the White Sox. It was a battle of the Lopez's last night. Ned Yost talks about both starters. Believe it or not, first time in Major League history that two guys named Lopez pitched against each other. There's a lot of Lopez's. Seems like a lot of Lopez's that are pitchers. It was weird to not, I mean, you'd think that would have happened before.
Yeah.
But anyway, here's Ned on the Lopez's.
A couple of mistakes that they didn't miss. Fastball's up in the zone. Curveball, yeah. So, I mean, there's probably like three balls that they did damage on, but outside of that, yeah, I thought he threw the ball extremely well. We just couldn't get anything going against their Lopez. Really good. Good curveball. I mean, good fastball. Spotted his fastball well. Kept us off balance effectively with the breaking ball and the change.
So in other words, we had the wrong Lopez. By golly, we can't catch a break this year. We just can't. You know a guy I like to have on my team? Christian Yelich.
I think anybody would like to have him.
He's pretty good. And maybe, just maybe, the Cardinals should just walk him. Bases loaded, don't care. Walk Yelich. They pitched to him again last night, the Cardinals did, and what do you know?
Yelich sends it to right center and deep. He's done it again. Get up. Get out of here. Gone for Christian Yelich. He has taken St. Louis out of the park again.
All right, so Yelich has, for the Brewers, NL MVP from last year. He's played six games against the Cardinals so far this year. He's 11 of 21 with eight home runs and 18 RBIs against the Cardinals. That comes out to a 1.714 slugging percentage, which is just insane. Here's an interesting statistic. If the Cardinals continue to pitch to him, and remember the Cardinals and Brewers play each other 13 more times. So he's on pace to, hit 25 homers against the Cardinals by himself. The most single-season home runs versus any one opponent, Lou Gehrig. You got to go back to 1936. So the Yankees hit 14 against Cleveland. Roger Maris, the Yankees in 61, when he hit 61, had 13. Joe Adcock, Milwaukee Braves, had 13 against Brooklyn in 1956. Hank Sauer had 13 against the Pirates in 54. And Jimmy Fox had 13 against the Tigers in one season in 32. So the most recent time any of those have happened, 1961, which would be 19 and 39, 58 years ago, would be the most recent.
Yeah.
So if the Cardinals continue to insist on pitching the Yelich, it looks like he'll get there pretty easily. That is insane.
Not even. It's not the middle of April, and he's already got eight.
Yeah. How about this? Most single-season home runs versus one opponent since the divisional era, since 1969. Sammy Sosa had 12 against the Brewers in 98. That's when he hit a ton of homers.
Mm-hmm.
Second on that list, not surprise. Somebody did it to the Royals. Matt Davidson? No. Brian Dozier of Minnesota had 11 against the Royals in 2016. I do remember that. I was like, why are we pitching this guy?
He was killing the Royals.
Why are we pitching this guy? This is nuts. Matt Davidson even on the White Sox or even in the big leagues right now?
He's not on the White Sox. I don't know if he's in the big leagues or not.
Okay.
That's what I was looking for the first time they played again this year. Is like, don't pitch to him if he's there. But he wasn't there.
So. White Sox should just bring him back just to hit against the Royals. This just out, breaking news, Monday Night Football, Chiefs and Chargers, Monday, November 18th, will be in Mexico City.
Yeah, I knew they were going to go back to Mexico again.
I believe that'll be a Chargers home game.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
So the Chiefs aren't giving up a home game. Remember last year they were going to play Mexico City, then there was all the controversy about the field not being in the proper shape and condition and this and that, and they moved the game back to, let's see, who were they playing?
L.A., Rams.
Yeah, the Rams, that's right, the Rams, and they played it in L.A. So the Chiefs will play in Mexico City if the field is deemed fit for play on November 18th. The full NFL schedule will come out today. The Chiefs know who they're going to play. It's just a matter of who they're going to they know the teams are going to play. They just don't know when and if they're going to be at home or on the road. So we will talk about that tomorrow here on the Sports Ticket. Doc Sadler, as I talked about earlier, he used to be the head coach at Nebraska for men's basketball. And guess what? Now he's back. He's going to be assistant coach for Fred Hoiberg. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And a little bit awkward and weird.
There's talk about that happening. So I thought it was kind of interesting right when that started coming up.
I'm going to give Doc Sadler a lot of credit here. And he's worked with Hoiberg before, been on Hoiberg's staff before. You know, there'd be a lot of guys with a huge ego saying that ain't happening. I don't care. I'm not going back to a place where I was a head coach. This is ridiculous. But Tom Osborne basically let him go. And Sadler said on Twitter, I saw that, you know, listen, I didn't really agree with the decision when I was let go, but at the same time, I respected it, this and that. You know, Tom Osborne's not the AD anymore, obviously. Bill Moose is. And I think that's a good addition to the staff for Nebraska. As an assistant coach, Doc Sadler, he knows the lay of the land in Nebraska. And so I think it makes some sense. But it is, there's not a lot of guys that would be a head coach at a place and then be willing to come back and be an assistant coach when they still could be a head coach, which is interesting. Why did he step down from Southern Miss in the first place? If he had a head coaching job, why would you go to an assistant job in Nebraska? So maybe he wasn't happy. Maybe his family wanted to move. I don't know the details as to why Doc Sadler stepped down from Southern Miss, or maybe it was a force out. I don't know, because I know he wasn't technically fired or terminated. But anyway, he is back returning to Lincoln as an assistant coach under Fred Hoiberg. So
power to him, man. I hope it works out.
I do, too.
That is interesting. I mean, you don't see that very much.
No. Unless it's Billy Martin.
It's usually the other way around. You know, I was an assistant here. Now I'm going to come back and be the head coach.
Right.
You know?
Unless you're Billy Martin back in the day with the Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Except you didn't come back as assistant manager. You were always the manager. But you got fired,
Four times, five times.
Why would you do that? That was Steinbrenner and the Yankees.
Yeah, that was definitely Steinbrenner.
That was crazy stuff. All right. The NBA playoffs continuing last night. And the Spurs were in position to be up 2-0, but Jamal Murray said, not so fast. If the computer will play. Okay, why?
Top of the key, Rudy Gay feeds it in the paint, poked away from behind by Nikola Jokic. Jamal Murray's going to pull up for three. Got it again!
Oh,
man! Yeah, Pepsi Center, you let him hear it!
Jamal Murray had been struggling through the first seven quarters of the series. He erupts for 21 of his 24 in the fourth. He saves the Nuggets season because they're down 2-0 going back to San Antonio. For all intents and purposes, that series is over. Greg Popovich, the head coach of the Spurs. What happened, coach? Why'd you lose?
Well, we gave up 38 points in the fourth quarter. End of story. Tough to win a game on the road in the playoffs if you're going to give up 38 points. Paul and Jamal had a lot to do with that, obviously. They both hurt us badly. We didn't have any answers for either one of them.
Yeah, when you give up 38, 39 points in a fourth quarter in a playoff game, typically if you give up that many in any quarter, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
See Philadelphia. They scored 51. They won. 51 and a quarter, and they won. It's shocking that they would win that game.
Yeah.
But Jamal Murray has been really struggling, and the head coach, Mike Malone of the Nuggets, said, you know, people ask, are you thinking about benching him? He's like, nah, I didn't want to ruin his confidence. I don't know if he had a lot of confidence, but apparently he had some. And that's what's great about basketball players. You can be ice cold. You got to have faith that you can you're going to come out of it. And
listen,
these guys
82
do
of these things in the regular season.
You're
going to
have a slump
games
somewhere.
I mean, you're not going to, you know, unless you're, even the greatest have slumps, you know?
Yeah.
And now you're going to have to go play, you know, however many more you want to get if you want to win a championship. You got to play a lot more games in the playoffs, too. So you can't just, and that's how you learn, too. You're a shooter, you're a player. You're not going to quit, okay? You're not just going to get down on yourself and just pack it in and be like, it's not working out for me right now. You got to keep going. I mentioned that about Derek Culver in the Final Four game. You know, yeah. He had a bad game, but mm-hmm. at the end of the game, he stepped up when they needed him.
Against Michigan State in the Final Four.
Exactly, and he made the shots that they needed. And I said, this is a perfect example of kids that are players, that are shooters, that are scorers. Don't, like, use this game as an example. Use Murray as an example mm-hmm. of guys can come back, even though you're not doing well for a pretty good stretch there. Don't ever give it up. Keep shooting. Keep going, and it'll work out for you more often than not.
Funny you bring up Jarrett Culver. He's going to make an announcement. I believe it's today. More than likely, it'll be to declare for the NBA draft. The Nuggets had the best home record in the NBA this year, 34-7. They're in danger of going 0-2, losing the first two at home against the Spurs. Down 78-59 late in the third quarter last night. Closed the game on a 55-27 run. And Jamal Murray was the catalyst in the fourth quarter. That series tied at one game apiece. A former Spur, Kawhi Leonard, playing very well last night as the Raptors even their series with the Magic at a game apiece.
Van Vliet to Powell. Drives, kick, Leonard open, three, good. Splash it down, Kawhi Leonard. 99-69, he's got 37.
Leonard, 15 of 22 from the floor, 37 points. Kyle Lowry showed up. He had 22.7 assists. Fred VanVleet, of course, playing for the Raptors. You heard him in that play-by-play call. It's kind of interesting. The Shockers, Shamet making big shots for the Clippers to beat the Warriors the other night. And then VanVleet, who I've always thought he'd be a good pro. I thought that when he was a freshman at Wichita State. You could just see, you could feel he was going to be a special player. And he's an important player off the bench for the Raptors. Raptors blow out the Magic 111-82. That series tied at a game apiece. The Nuggets-Spurs tied one game apiece. But there is a series that is not tied at one game apiece, unfortunately for me.
George, three-point range, weaving his way across the baseline. Throws it away. Lillard steals. Dame front court against Schroeder. Puts it on the deck. Drives down the lane. Put the shot up and in.
The Oklahoma City Thunder, they just can't win on the road. I think they've lost 11 in a row on the road in the playoffs, which is, you know, unheard of. Last time they ran a road game, the Thunder in the playoffs, when Kevin Durant was on their team, and they went to Golden State and won. So the Blazers win last night. I really thought the Thunder would win last night. They
didn't.
I did
too, yeah.
The Thunder lose by 20. Russell Westbrook did not play well, said after the game, this is on me. He was 5 of 20 from the field, just 1 of 6 on 3. The Thunder were 5 of 28 from 3-point line. You're not going to win games at any level in basketball, shooting 5 of 28 from 3. Damian Lillard with 29, but C.J. McCollum was a star with 33. And when I watched the first half of that game, Portland was doing a great job of penetrating, and they couldn't – the on-the-ball defense for the Thunder was a bit lacking. Paul George had 27 despite battling a shoulder injury, and the Thunder in a deep hole, just like they were last year against the Jazz. They are again this year, down 2-0. Against the Trailblazers. Remember, the Trailblazers are the higher seed. They're the 3 seed, the Thunder are the 6. But virtually everybody picked the Spurs as a 7 to beat the Nuggets the 2, and the Thunder the 6 to beat the Blazers a 3. And the Thunder swept the regular season series 4-0 over Portland the year before Portland swept Oklahoma City during regular season. And this is where we have to be careful when we focus on the regular season. We saw it in hockey. Tampa Bay won 62 games regular season. It doesn't mean anything once you get in the playoffs, other than you have home court, home ice advantage. And once you lose a game at home, everything you worked for the whole season for the last 5-6 months is completely gone. It's completely gone. Now you're fighting an uphill battle. If you lose a game at home, like Toronto, the 76ers, the Nuggets, they all lost game one at home after working so hard to get home court advantage. And now they have to win a game on the road or their season's over. No matter that, you can slice it all you want. Simple math is you had a home court advantage. It's a best of 7. You lost a game at home. And once you lost a game at home, the other team has home court advantage. That's it. That's all you gained after 82 games. You gained one game advantage. That's it. And once you lose game one at home, which is the best game to steal when you're a road team, in my opinion, is game one.
Oh, yeah.
When you lose game one, you're already battling from behind through the entire 7-game series, and it makes it difficult. Can you come back down 0-1, losing a first game at home? Oh, absolutely you can. But teams that win game one win more often than teams that lose game one. The percentages are in favor of the team that wins game one. So, and of course, if you're up 2-0, the percentages aren't good at all. We know what 3-0 is. when it comes to the NBA. Now, we've seen 3-1. A few teams have come back from that, like the Cavs against the Warriors a few years back in the NBA Finals. But you, game one is really, really important. And sometimes teams like, we lost, big deal, it's a long series. Well, true, but, you know, you get to game six and you're not at home and you're down 3-2. You may not get that other chance to get home court advantage. So you, it's really important to get it right back. Like, if you lose game one, okay, win game two at home, avoid being down 0-2. You got to get it right back in game three, that first game back. So for the Nuggets at San Antonio, next game, same thing with the Raptors in Orlando. Go grab home court back. And if you're the Nuggets and if you're Raptors and you don't, now you're down 2-1. And if you don't win the next game trying to get home court back, now you're down 3-1. It can just snowball on you that quickly because you lost game one of a series. Look what happened to the Lightning in the NHL. They're up 3-0 in game one. Blew a 3-0 lead, lost, and snowball swept. Best team in the NHL.
I mean, if you're Denver, you got to get it back right away. Especially in this matchup, because I think a lot of people still feel the Spurs have a good matchup here.
Spurs should be up 2-0 in 19-point lead last night.
And so now you got to go to San Antonio, get the first one, but you got to get one of them for sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, because I wouldn't feel real confident. San Antonio is one of the best home teams in the league this year too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were the best.
Yeah, they were not good on the road, San Antonio, and that's why it was important for them to pick up that first road win, because they haven't been good on the road this year.
Nope. NBA tonight, they continue in the playoffs. Indiana's at Boston. Boston up 1-0. Milwaukee against the Pistons. Blake Griffin, I expect to play the whole series due to knee soreness. Great time for him to miss. Bucks up 1-0 in that series. That looks like it's probably going to be a sweep or at least 5. And then Houston, Utah, interesting series. Utah at Houston. Houston's up 1-0 in that best of 7. So that's a wrap of the NBA playoffs. Let's see if there's any other things that are interesting. The Red Sox continue to struggle in Major League Baseball. Chris Sale getting absolutely pummeled by the Yankees last night. The Royals will play in New York against the Yankees after they finish up their series today with the White Sox. The Royals go to New York, so that should help the Yankees figure some things out with the Royals coming to town, because the Royals never play well at Yankee Stadium. There are talks that Tyronn Lue is a guy that the Lakers are targeting to be their next head coach, which I just say seriously. He was head coach of the Cavs, and many people believe that LeBron was kind of running the team. And the Lakers are afraid, a report is, the Lakers are afraid Tyronn Lue would give LeBron control, you think? Why would he change the formula from Cleveland to L.A.? To me, if you get Tyronn Lue, you're just getting a yes guy for LeBron.
That's it. I mean, I always go back to that one video where he's just not even standing in the huddle and they're not even letting him in the huddle.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that,
and
too.
And it's like, this is a head coach in the NBA that, I mean, that's, you're just, yeah, all you're doing is giving the team to LeBron if you do that.
Isn't that crazy? I mean,
and that's not going to work in the Western Conference.
No,
it's just
not. No, I agree with you.
You can do that in the East, and you can have, you know, with the teams at that point. Now, I don't know if you could do that in the East anymore with some of these teams coming up, you know, like the Raptors and the Bucks continuing to improve. And I don't know if you would have been able to keep it going. I think would have been in good shape, but you can't do that in the West and just have LeBron just running the whole team, and you're going to have to get guys around him too.
Do you, speaking of NBA and back to the playoffs for a moment, since we have a little bit of time, who do you think is the biggest threat to the Warriors? Is it somebody in the East, or do you think it's somebody in the West? Like, I don't think the Spurs are a major threat. I just don't think they match up with them.
Not right now, I don't either.
I think the Thunder match up better with the Warriors than the Spurs. I'm not saying that just because I'm a Thunder fan. Because I don't think the Thunder, even though they've won the last couple games against the Rockets, I don't think the Thunder match up great with the Rockets. For me, the Rockets are the only team that can beat the Warriors in the West. If the Warriors are healthy enough. And I'm not worried about Cousins being out with a torn quad. I think they'll be better without him. But is there somebody other than Houston has a better chance of knocking off the Warriors? If you agree with that from the West with me about the Rockets, do you think they're a team in the East that's got a better chance of beating the Warriors than the Rockets? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Bucks had 60 wins, but they haven't been proven in the playoffs. The Raptors always struggle early. They got Kawhi, but can they even get through the first round? The Celtics have all the talent in the world, but they've struggled all year long. They're a 4 seed. Philadelphia's got a ton of talent. Is there anybody in the East you think can knock off the Warriors?
Milwaukee would be the only one I would say, but they just don't have, I don't think they have the necessary experience and probably intestinal fortitude, I guess, if you could say that, to be able to win a seven-game series against the Warriors.
I would agree with you on that.
But I think talent-wise, I think they're probably the – because they've got, you know, kind of some of the same type of players. I mean, Giannis and Durant, you can definitely compare those kind of – that kind of skill and what they can bring to the table. And I just don't think they'd have enough to get it done. Houston, I think, is –
I think that's a team
what
that gives the Warriors
do,
problems.
Mm-hmm. What they do offensively.
Right.
Because, listen, you've got to be able to score a lot.
I mean, the Rockets
should have
beat the Warriors last year until Chris Paul got hurt. And this year, the Rockets won the first three meetings against the Warriors during the regular season. But once again, you got to be careful about that because we just talked about the Thunder sweeping their Blazers.
And what have we seen from the Warriors the last couple of years, you know?
Yeah.
The regular season, they don't take all that seriously.
And
they literally can flip a switch in the playoffs, and they're fine.
They are the one team that can flip a switch. Although the other night they had a switch they flipped off and blew a 31-point lead.
I don't think that's good for the Clippers the rest of the way.
Well, maybe not. I still think it would be hilarious. I mean, I'll tell you what. I'm going to say this. If the Clippers win game three of that series, here's a bold statement. You ready for this? If the Clippers win game three of that series, the Clippers are going to knock off the Warriors. I'm going to call it right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a major limb.
Oh, that is a major limb.
If the Clippers win game three, they're going to beat the Warriors. Because I think the Warriors are going to start to worry. I really do. Because they blew a 31-point lead. They should be up 2-0. They're going to be like, how are these guys playing with us? They're up 2-1, and we should be up 2-1 or 3-0. We're the Warriors. How dare them? The Clippers are, with Doc Rivers, they're a hard, tough-minded team.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got a whole bunch of guys, got free agents to be. They got guys that are just a good mix. They don't have a superstar. And the Warriors are all cocky and always whine to the officials left and right. Even their head coach does. And I like Steve Kerr and I like the Warriors team, but I'm tired of the Draymond Green and I'm now getting tired of Kevin Durant. And it's become like they think they're the show, which they are a show. I have to admit, they are. They're fun to watch when they're making shots. When they're missing a whole bunch of threes, they're just like any other team. But if the Clippers win game three, I think the Clippers, all the pressure's on Golden State by a mile and a half. And I think the Clippers are going to win that series if they win game three. That's my bold prediction. Having said that, I think the Warriors will win game three and get control of the series. Because if you're a great NBA team, you're a dynasty, if you want to call them that, the Warriors, you go and win in L.A. next game. You take home court right back. How many times do we see Jordan and the Bulls do that? Or Kobe and the Lakers, Kobe and Shaq and the Lakers. Almost every time they lost a game at home, the very next game on the road, they just grabbed home court right back.
Yeah.
And that's a sign of a championship team. And I think the Warriors will do that. I agree with you. But if for some reason they don't, and the Clippers go up 2-1, there's my huge, gigantic, bold prediction that the Warriors are going down. This is the year of the 8 seed knocking out the 1 in multiple sports. If the Clippers win game 3, which I'm stressing, major if. Today in NFL, the Patriots are signing longtime Broncos receiver Demaryius Thomas after missing out on him at the trade deadline. Remember, Thomas is coming off a season-ending Achilles injury. Listen, if he can get back and healthy, that's a good get for the Patriots. Thomas isn't what he once was, of course. Torn Achilles, that's tough to come back from. We've seen Derrick Johnson do it a couple of times, but still wasn't the same player. So
Eric Berry,
of course, hasn't been the same player. So we shall see how that works out. We conclude the show today. As you know, on Sunday, Tiger Woods, I don't know if you heard about this or not, Tiger Woods won his 15th major championship. He won the Masters for the fifth time. Jack Nicklaus, the only one that's won more major championships with 18, and he's the only one that's won more green jackets than Tiger. The Bear, Jack Nicklaus has 6 green jackets, and Tiger now has 5. And it is interesting to see people in this world, especially many people in the media, write people off and say, and you know this on the show, I rarely say the word never. I'm afraid to say the word never because I think as long as you have somebody with the will to succeed or a team to succeed, I don't know, I might have said, if you told me Golden State's up 31 that the Clippers can come back and win that game, I might have said that'll never happen. Maybe I would have said that'll never happen, okay? But we've seen so many things in sports, and I've already said multiple times why I thought Tiger all along was going to get back atop and win a major. despite what many people said, I was in the minority because I thought he's still a young guy. There are golfers that win in their 40s and win majors in their 40s. Phil's done that. Obviously, Jack won the Masters in 1986 at the age of 46. So until Tiger got to 47, I held out hope that Tiger was going to win another major. He did. This is really cool. I found this on social media. I'm going to play this for you. And I wish I could have it on. I tell you what, I've got it shared. If you follow me on Facebook, it's just my name, and you can see this. I'll try to share it to the sports ticket page as well on Facebook. But let me set this up. So I don't know when this was filmed. I don't think this was not filmed after he won the Masters. This is before he won the Masters. I think it's pretty clear. But he was already getting close, as we know. He was runner-up in the PGA last year. He had a good year in the majors, actually, Tiger did. So this is a video, and Tiger Woods is sitting in a chair in the middle of a room, okay? And he has a little TV monitor or iPad that is in front of him. And Tiger Woods, listen very carefully, so because you need to know this while you're listening to this. Tiger Woods is watching individuals, and many of these individuals are people in the mainstream media, and some of these voices you will recognize, saying that Tiger's done. This is Tiger Woods watching a video of people telling the world that Tiger Woods, he might as well quit. Listen to this. Hopefully I got the volume all potted up. This is what Tiger is hearing and seeing these people actually say it on camera. And you wonder how people have a fuel inside to be the best when Tiger already had that all along. This would just drive me to be even more determined. Check this out.
Return his previous form.
No. Do you think he stands a chance of being the Tiger Woods we once knew?
No.
No, no, no. Here's what's going to happen. He is not ever going to win another tournament.
I don't think we'll ever see Tiger Woods win a golf tournament again.
He's showing up at these tournaments pretty much knowing that he's not going to be there.
The short game is gone. His health is gone.
The next press release Tiger Woods should release should be, I'm retiring.
I have considered him now for the last 5-6 years a former golfer.
You're washed. Just give up while you're ahead. Retire with some dignity.
Tiger Woods that we all knew, he will never, ever be that guy again.
And the video closes with Tiger looking up from that video screen and just a smirk on his face. And you know what the translation is? And I've got goosebumps. I literally have goosebumps. You can see them on my arms as I see and watch this. And I've already watched this before, that video that I just played for you. You heard the audio part, obviously, here via the radio waves. But that Tiger smirk, just looking up, the translation, here's the translation I take out of it. If you could have been inside Tiger's mind to hear what he was saying to himself, I think it was basically like, you bunch of bleep bleeps. You don't know jack squat. And it's going to be so sweet when I prove you idiots wrong. That's how I took that translation with that smirk. Because I know when people doubt me, and when people say I can't do something, that makes me want to do it even more. It's not that people say you're not allowed to do it. That's different. You know, mom and dad, although when I was a kid, mom and dad said you're not allowed to do this. Sometimes you'd rebel and go, I'll just show you, mom and dad. And then you get older and you're like, oh, mom and dad was right. Why didn't I listen to him? In this case, a little bit different. These are people doubting you can ever make it back, that you aren't any good anymore. You can't do it. You're not good enough. You know, it's like the Stuart Smalley Saturday Night Live skit. We play the cut every once in a while on the show. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And doggone it, people like me. Well, let me tell you something. Tiger Woods has always been good enough. He's always been smart enough. But a lot of people jumped off the wagon and didn't like him anymore because of the things he did off the course. And understandably so. But when people talked about his golf game, and you heard those people say, you know, Stephen A. Smith, his short game's gone, his health is gone. Yeah, but that's both two things you easily can get back, especially the short game.
The health comes back, and then the short game comes back.
So when you say his health is gone, his game is gone, well, yeah, but if he gets his health back, everything else comes back into play, because nobody in that soundbite I just played said that Tiger doesn't have any talent. They just basically were like, well, he's just done. He's broken down and done. And he should retire. Jamel Hill, who said very many controversial things over the years on ESPN, yeah, and been fired multiple times from that network for her things she says. She gets in trouble because she doesn't know when to be quiet. You know, I mean, saying that Tiger should hold a press conference and say he's retiring, I mean, come on. Who gives you the right to say that? I mean, yeah, because you're a talking head. You know, and then hearing Cowherd say, I've considered him a former golfer for the last 5 or 6 years. How do you consider anybody a former golfer when he's still golfing? That's just dumb and moronic. I mean, that's like saying I consider Colin Cowherd a former sports talk show host. That makes no sense. He's hosting a show now. I mean, that's so silly. You know what I'm saying? It's so silly. I consider Dusty Dinas a former sports director. He's still employed. He's a sports director. What? He didn't retire. He didn't quit. He didn't get fired. He's not former. I mean, Tiger Woods is not former Tiger Woods. He's Tiger Woods. He's still alive. Although there for a while, we worried. I just love it. I love a redemption story. And I love when people can shove it in people's faces when they're dead wrong. And trust me, I actually enjoy when I'm wrong, people can shove it in my face. I actually enjoy that from time to time. Now, if you're a total jack about it, yeah, I probably don't appreciate it. But I don't have any problem, you know, being wrong. Like, if the Clippers win game 3 and they lose in the next 3, and people make fun of me going, you went out on a limb and you said that the Clippers are going to win that series when they're up 2-1. What were you thinking? What were you smoking? I'll be like, I don't remember. But
yeah,
you know what? I went out, at least I had the guts to make a prediction, go out on a limb. But I didn't degrade the Warriors. I didn't say, oh, the Warriors suck. They're done. They're a bunch of choke artists and former NBA players. I'll never go that far with anybody. I mean, you know, Alex Gordon is probably the one guy that I've been really critical of based on his on-the-field performance because the numbers bear out he hasn't performed. But have I said he should retire? No. Have I said he's a former baseball player? I'd have more reason to say that about Gordon than I might anybody about Tiger. A former MLB hitter? I could have said that because he was hitting 200. Yeah. And making millions of dollars, guaranteed money.
You talk about a guy that's been on a roller coaster of a career, too, from that aspect, because we were done with him when he was playing third base.
Oh, yeah. People wanted to cut him.
To Omaha, and they moved him to left field. And now, yeah,
and people said that'll never work.
There's your comeback story.
Yeah.
Literally, it was a comeback story for Alex Gordon.
He was supposed to be the next George Brett.
And all these gold gloves that he's won, and then now his bat falters again, and we're done with Alex again. Like, it's just like, what a roller coaster. And how many times we've talked about Alex Gordon on the highs and lows on this show.
Right.
When you really think back and look at it, and it's like, man, that's a – well, yeah, we've never said, okay, Alex, time to retire. Get the hell out of here. Heck out of here.
Right, we haven't. We've said the Royals, you know, they could try to trade him. They're not going to get nothing with him. You could cut bait. What we've said is the Royals should probably put him on the bench more often and let younger guys play. We've talked about that you'd have to just swallow – you just have to swallow your pride. And, you know, yeah, we're paying a lot of money for a guy to come off the bench. But, you know, the Royals – you know, they're giving a lot of money to Danny Duffy. And when he comes back healthy, are you going to pay a reliever $13 million a year on a long-term contract to be a one-inning guy? And that might be what's best for the team. But guys get caught up in the investments of what they put into the guy. Exactly. So, like, well, we're going to force him to still be a starter. And I think there was for a time, and once again, it's an indictment of the Royals system. There's not, like, an outfielder ready to go to replace Alex Gordon.
Yeah.
So Alex Gordon, with about any other professional franchise, would have already been, one, cut, or two, he'd been coming off the bench as a role player at best, and he's still an everyday player. Now, he's off to a great start this year, although we've only played about, 17 games. At the end of the year, I will highly doubt he's where he is now.
Yeah, he's not going to be hitting .345 at the end of the year.
No, but if he ends the year hitting .280 with 20 homers and 80 RBIs, that's a really good year. Is that still worthy of how much money he's making? I would say probably not, but that's the best you're probably going to get, which would be a successful, in my opinion, comeback story.
Oh, yeah.
Because the guy's been lost to the plate for a couple of years. But we didn't talk about he's a former baseball player, charading as masquerading as a real baseball player. He's a fraud. He's never lost his defensive prowess. We've talked about that. But when you get a guy so much money, guaranteed money, and at the age the Royals gave it to him and so much per year, and you want a guy not to just be a great defensive player. He needs to be a really good all-around player, and Alex Gordon just hasn't been that. But now he's he's playing well. And, you know, that's where you need to give credit. When you're critical of somebody, which we have been on this show about Alex Gordon, and it's been deserved, I think. Well, we've had some fun over the top every once in a while, just joking about it.
Yeah.
But we've never said, you know, just cut that horrible person and whatever else, and he's done. We said he's probably done as a hitter, but will anybody else take him? No. And you know what? We'd be wrong. If we said he was done as a hitter, we're wrong right now because he's now hitting the ball really well. Now, is this just a three-week mirage and he's going to go back the way he was, or has he figured something out? Or maybe all along he's been hurt and we don't know it, and now he's fully healthy, just like Tiger is. I don't know, but we have never, and I hope we never, go down the road of just absolutely saying this guy is a complete loser, or he's done, he can't play anymore, he'll never play anymore. I'll tell you a guy that comes to my mind right now that people are completely doubting and thinks his career is over. And I think this would be just as good of a comeback story as Tiger Woods, or at least close to it. And maybe people would disagree with this comment. Almost everything I read, and you certainly, the pictures don't look good, the video didn't look good, but I really hope, and I am not counting him out yet, I really hope Alex Smith gets back on that football field and plays quarterback again. Mm-hmm. After that horrible, horrific injury. You know, Joe Theismann never came back, all right? And I hope Alex Smith does, because basically everybody just assumes he's done.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he has, I don't know if Alex wants to put himself in peril again to getting hurt. He's got all the money in the world. He has every reason not to come back. He's not a guy like Tiger Woods where people are ripping him about, oh, you know, he was overpaid player. He was a nice quarterback, not a great quarterback, and he wasn't worthy of the money, and the Redskins wasted this money, shouldn't have traded for him. He'll never play again. Da, da, da. You don't hear that because, one, he's not a superstar, but he's a really good person from everybody that I know that knows him. And I really, really hope Alex Smith can get back. If he can just get back on the field and play at all, would be a tremendous success story. It'd be a lot like Teddy Bridgewater, who absolutely just ripped up everything in his knee in a non-contact drill with the Vikings a few years back in training camp. And he's never been the same guy, but he made it back to NFL, and now he's a backup with the Saints making good money. Those are the types of stories I love to see, and I think that would be terrific. It won't be on the level of Tiger Woods, no question, but it still would be an amazing comeback story for a guy to just have his leg ripped up like that and broken in all these places. And then, I mean, they actually talked about amputation at one point was considered, which is so scary. And Alex Smith, at the age he is, on top of that, he's not 25, he's around 34, 35. I would love to see Alex Smith get back on the field and play, because there's not a single person in this country in the media that thinks he will. And I would just love for him to prove all of them wrong, even though they're not that loud saying a lot about him, because Alex Smith is not a superstar. Now, if he doesn't come back, he still had a fantastic career, made a ton of money. Yeah. But wouldn't you love to see Alex Smith back on the field, no matter who he plays for?
I don't see any kind of those stories where guys are written off or dead and they come back and, you know, whether they're as good or efficient as they once were, at least get a chance to get out there and prove that you still can do it and you want to do it. That's the thing is you gotta really want to do it when you're that age, when it happens to you, like a guy like Alex Smith. I mean, it's gotta be within you to be able to put yourself through all that rehab and getting healthy and coming back to be at the elite level you need to be to play in the NFL. So that's the key for me, is like, does he want to do it? But if he does, I wouldn't doubt him, honestly, from that aspect of the drive that he would have to come back to do it. That's never been an issue with Alex Smith. It's just he just doesn't have the same talent as some quarterbacks do.
And does he have the support of his family?
His passion
to come
and
back?
Drive and everything else that he brings to the table, I loved about him.
Yeah, great work ethic.
Yeah.
Mahomes says a lot about how Alex Smith helped him, and Smith knew Mahomes was going to take his job.
Yeah.
So those are leaders right there, and Alex Smith was. And I wish he had more success with the Chiefs, although the fact that they struggled in the playoffs with Alex Smith allowed and I think forced the Chiefs to draft a guy like Patrick Mahomes to where the Chiefs are where they are today, but wouldn't be where they are today without Alex Smith. And so that's another example of a guy that would be a great comeback story if Alex Smith could get back on the field. Teddy Bridgewater was a great story. You know, yesterday I asked Riley Gates, if you missed our interview with Riley of GoPowerCat.com, we have Riley on every Tuesday, our Wildcat Insider. And one of the things I asked him at the off-the-wall question at the end was that, have you ever witnessed, or was there ever a better sports moment in your opinion, than what happened on Sunday with Tiger, which was just amazing. You know, the TV analyst, Jim Nantz, Nick Faldo, just being quiet and letting that thing run for 4 minutes was fantastic, because it made you feel like you were there. People weren't talking too much over it. They let the moment be the moment. And sometimes the best broadcasting is the ones where you go quiet. There's a game-winning shot. You say what happened, then you shut up and let the crowd take over. So many guys in our profession don't understand that. And it was brought up to me in a text, which is, and this is why we get caught up in recency and we don't have the time to really think it through over the 100 years of sports. You know, was there a better sports moment in the history of sports? You know, Tiger Woods, and that's why I never said it was. I said it may be the best or one of the best sports moments in the history of sports. I think it's probably the best in golf history, but I don't know that for sure. There might be somebody else that can come up with one, like Jack Nicklaus from the Masters is pretty doggone good. But considering what Tiger went through, this might be the greatest moment in golf history. But Todd sent a text and made a great point. Can you think of another sports moment that just captivated the world or captivated our country? That would be considered one of the greatest sports moments of all time. Think about our country and specifically within the United States of America. Can you think of one?
You know, when I think about things that captivated our country, honestly, in sports, one of the first things that comes to my mind isn't even about a game. Mm-hmm. It's about a pitch that President George Bush pitched in the World Series after 9/11. Well, if you're talking about something that unified and brought attention from the entire country, we weren't Yankee fans.
Yeah.
Not many of us were around here, obviously. But, no, I can't. As far as something actually that happened, I can't think of anything sports-wise that... not off the top of my head, really, that just everybody's just right in on. I think the whole country was captivated with that home run chase in 98.
So you know what? You're younger, and I missed this one, and I don't remember it when it happened either. And so I overlook it as well. But Todd had a great text. I'm so glad he sent me this text. There's no question the moment he's talking about was bigger than Tiger Woods winning the Masters. It's not even close. And you haven't come up with it, and I wouldn't have come up with it, or I would have taken a long time to come up with it. Riley didn't come up with it yesterday, and that's no knock on Riley. He wasn't born when this happened. The Miracle on Ice.
Oh, yeah.
That captivated the whole country.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of young high school college kids going up against grown men that were unbeatable. And Herb Brooks, I mean, you want to know how great that story was and why it's one of the greatest moments in sports history? They made a movie about it.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever you make a movie about this type of stuff, which they probably will be someday, I don't know who's going to play the role of Tiger Woods. Denzel Washington when he's 80? I don't know. Somebody's going to play the role of Tiger Woods in a movie.
It'll probably be Chadwick Boseman. He does all those things.
Okay.
You know, he played...
or Michael Jordan,
Jackie
the actor.
Jackie Robinson. And,
okay.
And, yeah.
Or maybe Michael Jordan, the actor.
Played James Brown. And yeah, it could be Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, because he's been in the Creed movies.
Creed, yeah.
Yeah. So, but that one, I feel kind of ashamed I didn't think about that one until Todd told me. Because absolutely, you win the Olympics... And you had no chance against Russia.
Yeah.
A just unbelievable, huge, gigantic underdog. And then the famous call, one of the famous calls in all of sports history is, do you believe in miracles? Yes, by Al Michaels, which is still just gives you goosebumps. And I wasn't even, I was alive, I was four, but I don't remember
definitely
it.
Definitely was not.
And you weren't, and Riley wasn't. But Todd's a little bit older than us, Todd. Yeah. But that was one I hadn't thought about. So when we get caught up in the moment, that's the greatest national championship game I've ever seen. And if you really think about
it's caught up in the moment of Michael Jordan's the greatest player of all time.
Well, we didn't see Wilt Chamberlain, Pistol Pete Maravich, Oscar Robertson. That's why we should never do those. Yeah. We should never have those conversations.
It's the greatest moment in sports of all time. Well, I can't say that because I didn't see that.
Exactly.
I mean, I've watched the ESPN documentary. I've seen the movie, but I didn't actually see it happen with my own eyes when it happened.
Yeah, but for somebody to say now, younger generation, I'm not younger anymore, but you, me, Riley, Parker, whoever it may be, to say that was the greatest sports moment in sports history, that's only based on how long you've lived, because it's not. You got to be careful how you say
these
things.
And what are those moments in sports history that happened before we had TV to be able to watch it, not on a mass media entity there? And,
how about Lou Gehrig's speech?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be some amazing moment in sports history right there? You didn't have tons of cameras and social media to promote it. So, Tiger's comeback from the ashes to the top and winning the Masters is one of the, maybe the greatest golf moment in sports history for golf. Maybe. Once again, maybe. But in regards to all of sports, that one isn't, I don't think it is to the same level as the U.S. hockey
no,
team beating
like,
Russia.
Because
that's the
when
whole
people
country.
Actually tell you
a lot of people
understand.
Don't care about golf.
Exactly.
The country. And you beat Russia.
Yeah.
And you got the, what was it, the Cold War,
the
whatever
Cold
you want to
War
call
it. Was still all, I mean, that was on for 30-some years.
Because in 84, Russia boycott the Olympics in 84? And when it was in L.A., and then we boycotted, I think, in 88 or something. No,
it
wasn't 88.
It was 70. It was, I think it was 76, maybe.
Yeah, I have to look it up.
I can't remember what it all
I know
was,
Russia yeah. boycotted the L.A.
They
Olympics
did,
in 84,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
So there was such a, I mean, Russia was our big rival. USA hated Russia. Russia hated the Americans. And that's what everybody tells me because I was four at the time. And then for the USA, a whole bunch of whippersnappers. I like to say
actually,
that
actually, I think it was the Summer Olympics in 80 that the U.S.
Oh, the Summer Olympics. That's it.
Because there have been the Winter Olympics
yep.
that they played hockey.
That's right.
So it was the Summer Olympics in 80.
That's right.
The Summer Olympics in 84 in L.A.
That's right.
When Russia,
and I know a lot of
it
people.
It was actually
were,
the USSR back then.
And when Jimmy Carter made that announcement, he was the president then, so that would have been 80.
Soviet Union, yeah.
Jimmy Carter made an announcement that, you know, all these. Can you imagine all these folks that worked so hard to get ready for the Olympics in 4 years,
yeah.
and then to be told your country's boycotting because of political situation, and that's and then Russia did it 4 years later in the L.A. Olympics. That's how much heat there was between Russia and the United States and the Soviet Union. And for a whole bunch of 18, 19-year-old guys, for the most part, to beat the big bad, considered really the big bad bully of hockey. I mean, they just dominated. They killed everybody. They squashed everybody. For the U.S. to even just hang around in that game,
squashed
let alone
the U.S.
win.
In the,
yes.
In the exhibition.
That's right.
Know?
Let alone for the U.S. to win that game was insane. And as Al Michaels so properly put it, do you believe in miracles? Yes, because that was a miracle. If the U.S. played that hockey game again 100 times, I don't know if they'd win one more time. But that's what's great about sports, a one-game, do-it-all type of situation. And people still to this day forget that was not the gold medal match.
Oh, yeah.
That was the semifinal. The U.S., I believe, had to beat Finland in the final.
Yeah.
And they did, luckily, or that wouldn't have put the bow on the story.
Yeah.
But don't you think that's a bigger sports moment in the history of sports than Tiger Woods winning the Masters?
Definitely.
On Sunday?
And it kind of ties in a little bit to what I was talking about with George Bush, too. You know, it's a political thing.
Absolutely.
It goes beyond the spectrum of just the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty crazy stuff when you think about it. So when you have these discussions, whether they're arguments, and I think they really don't have to be arguments. I think to me they need to be discussions. You know, when you see the talking heads on TV yelling at each other about why LeBron's greater than Michael Jordan and why Michael Jordan's greater than the other guy, nobody's wrong. Nobody's wrong because it's your opinion, and you can twist the numbers all you want. And it's not even fair, as I've said all along, it's not fair to those that came before them, like Wilt Chamberlain, like Oscar Robertson, Pistol Pete Maravich, a whole bunch of others I'm leaving out. Those guys might have been better, and we don't even put them in the conversation because we don't have all the great footage of them, or we didn't grow up with those guys. And a lot of people are saying Tiger Woods the greatest golfer of all time. People could argue Jack Nicklaus is still the greatest golfer of all time. Tiger, if with one more tournament win, will tie the record for most tournaments ever won by a golfer. We're talking tournaments, not just majors, everything. Tiger has more tournament titles than Jack Nicklaus, but Jack has 18 majors, and that's how people judge that. Some people. So there are some that say Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer of all time, even if he hadn't won the Masters on Sunday. And then there are other people saying it's all about the majors, and Jack's the greatest of all time. Some will tell you Arnold Palmer is the greatest of all time. Some will say Tom Watson should be considered. If he didn't have to always go up against Jack, he was one of the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It's all based on your opinion and what you saw and what you watched. And so when you come out and say, well, that Tiger Woods winning the Masters and the comeback for the ages, that's the greatest sports moment in the history of sports. No, it's not. It's your sports. You think it is. Don't say it as if it's a fact. What you need to say is that may be the best sports moment in the history of sports, or that may be the best moment in golf sports history, or that's the best sports moment I've ever seen or witnessed or been a part of as a spectator. But when people just want to shove it down everybody else's throats that LeBron's the greatest, Michael Jordan's the greatest, Tiger's the greatest, there are other people to consider in the conversation. So let's not make it an argument and start yelling at each other like a lot of people do. Let's make it and put down the other guy, which is what everybody does.
That's what I don't like.
I don't like that. Like, well, Jack's a better person than Tiger because he didn't cheat on his wife. That has nothing to do with who's the greatest golf player of all time. Now you're talking about who's the better person.
Yeah.
That's a whole different discussion. And people blur those lines all the time. And it's really, these discussions are silly because you're not going to change anybody's mind, period. You just won't.
Yeah, I mean, and I've gotten from the LeBron Michael thing, well, Jordan left the game and went to baseball. Who cares?
Who cares?
Did that affect the way he played basketball? Because he still won three more after he came back.
Yeah.
And they had the best record for a long time ever in the NBA after that.
Right.
After he left for baseball.
Right.
So, you know, that's what for me is it's always like we get into these discussions and arguments and, like you said, they should be discussions, but a lot of times they turn into arguments.
Right.
And then that's what everybody wants to do is just tear down the other person, not present their points to make their guy look better, the guy that they're backing, but they want to tear down what the other guy did or didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest problem I have with a lot of that stuff.
Absolutely. I agree with you. All right. Well, you don't know where the show's going to go, but these were good conversations today, and everybody is entitled to their opinion. But when you really get to thinking about it, the Miracle on Ice was a much bigger sports moment than Tiger Woods with his amazing comeback to win the Masters and 11 years later win a major. There are bigger moments in sports, but we get caught up in that was the recent moment, thus it's the greatest moment.